This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Pressing Matters, a show that takes you beyond the headlines. This morning we're discussing reforms of the media, and to help us in that conversation we have Anita Nadaraj, a journalist formerly with The Star and ASEAN Today, and also Zahram Naim, ex-co member of Aliran, as well as an academic at Nottingham University in Malaysia. Thank you so much for joining us. I just want to let everyone know that both of you were involved in very recent initiatives around media reform. Zahram, you were part of a regional forum called Media Reforms, Opportunities and Challenges for Malaysia, Lessons from Southeast Asia. So that took a broader canvas. And Anita, only last Friday, you organized a meeting on media reform, and I believe that you were involved in the formation of a media reform advocacy group soon after the GE14 election. So I want to begin, Anita, I want to begin with you. You know, there's the question of, can the media today service their listeners and viewers much better, without media reform, without those reforms that we expect the new government to put in place? Can they still do better by their listeners, readers and viewers?
History has shown that it cannot, simply because media is there to engage the public, you know, to listen to what they have to say as well. It's just not a one-way process, it's a two-way process. So clearly the media has not fulfilled that particular function as such. So we do need the reforms very badly, actually, if we are to move on. Otherwise, we will be stuck in a rut like this, you know.
Sarah, what do you think? I know that media reform is important, but even before that, can we see changes that benefit the public at large?
Good morning, Sharon, and thanks for inviting me. I think one has to look at the media as a very complex sort of organization or organizations. There's a so-called public service media or the government-owned media. There's the commercial media, and now there's the internet as well, meaning internet online news, and also more recently social media. Right? So that how do you get the most from those different types of media would depend on how you approach those different types of media. It's not a one size fits all sort of situation, I feel, right? So in certain cases, I think with the internet news media, they've performed pretty well so far, the main ones. And I think the aim should be to encourage them to perform better and for them to being, I feel, more responsible media. I think that the aim should be to inculcate more so-called positive values, as it were, there. And I think the regulation can be done on their own. For the commercial media, again, I mean, their aims are quite different. They're essentially out there to get poor profits. But in attempting to maximize profits, I think there is a need for them to think also about the needs of the nation, as it were, right? And as for the government owned media, I think that's where there really needs to be massive change, yeah? A change from the assumption that they are there by the government and for the government to an assumption that they're there for the Malaysian public, and to serve the public, as it were, and to adopt a more public service sort of ethos.
As opposed to just serving the government of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, Zahram, you know, you help. It's very useful, your distinction that the media is not one thing, it's actually many things. Vanita, where do you stand on this? Your group, your media reform advocacy group, what is its main target? Are you looking at the state-owned media, the public broadcasters? Are you looking at commercial, private, media organizations? Or are you looking at the social media? What's your reform agenda for the media primarily focused on? Which segment of the media? Is it the RTMs of the world? Is it the Star and the NSTs of the world? Or is it, in fact, Facebook and Twitter?
We are starting from a different point altogether. What we want to do is, right now, for now, we want to do two things. One is push for the repeal of all these restrictive media laws. Second thing we want to do is go ahead and start a press council. No point of talking about it, but we are already starting off right now itself. We are meeting up with different media organizations, different journalist groups, people, interested parties, stakeholders, to come together to now to form this press council. One of the things that we feel ought to be done with the in setting up the press council is that it needs to be a people initiative, not a government initiative. Mm-hmm. We do not need laws or the government telling us how it should be done. It's us coming together and deciding how do we self-regulate, how do we set up standards, how do we set up guidelines for us to follow, and how do we go about ensuring there's compliance there, who should be in the council. And underlying all this will be transparency. There has to be that that accountability and transparency, how we select people, who sits there, what the processes, how do we attend to grousers, how do we look at issues that have been brought up by the public, so that it's public now being aware of what their power is, coming in and telling the media how they want the media to behave and and what they expect from the media.
Zarum, you know, at that forum that you helped organize, there was a discussion about the press council and there was some pushback. I mean, wouldn't a room full of people enthusiastic about the press council, there were some voices that cast doubt as to whether a press council was even necessary now that we've had, this change in government?
I think it's dangerous to pin one's hopes on politicians. Yeah, a benign government, that's pretty rare thing, I feel. So subsequently, there is a need for us citizens to establish safeguards. I totally agree with Anita that there is a need to think about self-regulation. There is a need to think about press councils. Although I would add that we should think about different councils because I think different media have different problems to resolve, and but underlying all of it would be underlying if you have three different councils, underlying all of it would be the notion that the power has got to be invested in the people, yeah, that it's not supposed to be invested in the state or the market.
Because, coming back to this idea of public participation as opposed to just professional participation in the press council, the public, of course, is multiple as well. There are many publics, as it were. They're conservatives, they're liberals, they're cosmopolitans. They're, groups that are much more insular, much less tolerant. So how do you deal with the fact that the public itself might not have a single standard of measure or consensus in terms of freedom of expression, for instance? You could find a situation where the people, as it were, want more censorship. What would you do with that scenario?
The council will have a code of ethics, and that code of ethics will have to address the diversity in all these issues. And that is what the councillors are there for, the committee, the team as such. They would have to look at each issue, place it against the code of ethics, and then decide where and how they should, what the next course of action should be, you see? So, yes, there is this diverse group. There are so many issues as such, which is why the code of ethics will have to really be formed after consultation with different stakeholders. It cannot be the academics only forming it or the journalists only coming up with it. It's got to be all of us coming together, sitting down, forming it, looking at the different models that are out there, different codes that are out there, and seeing what suits us.
Zarum, I want to put the same question to you. You say that, benign government is a rare thing, but, society can also be quite vicious and have a lot of, that can have censorship as part of its main default mode, right? I mean, every time they fear, anarchy or they fear disorder, they turn to the state or they turn to the police or they report their neighbours. Are you certain that the public will be a better safeguard for freedom of expression than the state is?
Of course I'm not certain. I think nothing is pretty certain in this world. And there are problems with democracy, of course, when you allow so many different points of view, and you must allow so many different points of view to be expressed. Therefore, I think in the process of thinking about setting up media councils or whatever you want to call it, broadcast councils or press councils, I think we must ourselves understand where we're heading, you know, and notions, what sort of ethos, what sort of particular culture are we planning to develop in the different media. And therefore, I think the notion of public service, I feel, is one of those important things. And the debates surrounding public service around the world, I think, needs to be addressed in the context of a country like Malaysia before a press council can be formed.
I'm speaking to Zahrul Naim. He is an ex-co member of Aliran, as well as an academic at Nottingham University in Malaysia, and Vanita Nadaraj, journalist formerly with The Star and ASEAN Today. We're talking about media reform. You can always join this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Welcome back. I'm Sharad Kutan, and with me, Zahrul Naim, is the ex-co member of Aliran, as well as an academic at Nottingham University in Malaysia, I believe in the Department of Communications. Also with us this morning, Vanita Nadaraj, a journalist formerly with The Star and ASEAN Today. Vanita, I'll turn to you again. The meeting that you had on Friday, it sounds like a very action-oriented group, you know, setting up a press council. How much groundwork needs to be done? I mean, what exactly is your group trying to do at this point in time in order to get the Press Council initiative off the ground?
Okay, this is where we have got a two-part thing. First part is where we talk to the stakeholders as such, your journalists, your media owners, operators, academics, and everybody else to come together to start doing things, meaning start coming up with the code of ethics, start coming up with the guidelines, start coming up with different things, you know, as to what it should be. It's not us who's deciding what to do and bringing people on board, but rather let's everybody come together, put our heads together and figure out how we're going to do this press council, knowing that it's going to be rocky at first, but that we need to be able to smoothen, iron out all the issues as we go along. The second part is where we do a bit of media literacy. We try to educate the public. We are going to produce content to tell the people what to expect from your media, how media operates, who are the owners currently, how are they politically linked, how do they come up with story ideas and that sort of a thing, and what should be the way it should be, how to differentiate between defamation, contempt, and what is fair comment, you know, things like that, just to educate the public as to what is the media.
That's a fascinating list of, and some of it, I guess, will be long-term. But, Sarah, you know, at this forum that you were part of, the Code of Ethics was brought up as one of those things that could be a toothless tiger. Basically, if you have a Code of Ethics, how is it imposed? I mean, why would media even follow it if there are no punitive measures? I remember the criticism that came in. What did you make of that discussion? Code of Ethics without teeth is pointless.
I think that came from a senior journalist. Yeah, I see his point. Given the context we are in, we're not very respectable people, I feel. So, including journalists and broadcasters. So, subsequently, we tend to not care for Code of Ethics. Yeah. I only say that half in jest because I feel while that's true, while it's partly true, what is then required, I guess, is education. Yeah, I think to make the various people involved, journalists, broadcasters, and so on and so forth, aware of their responsibilities to society, what they are producing. The artifacts they produce are not just news, as it were, but they are essentially ideological goods that provide ideas for society. And therefore, ground rules need to be essentially established first based on an understanding of what the situation is like, how bad it is, and how far we can go forward and what we need to do before we can go forward, right? I mean, if you don't agree with the code of ethics, these are the consequences, basically. We'll say consequences, wider consequences for society, not the fact that you'll be put in jail and so on and so forth. So there is a need, I think there is a need for, it's imperative that all stakeholders concerned understand what's at stake and understand what is being proposed and understand what's the good of what's being proposed. Yeah. So once you have... Sorry.
Yeah, so, Vanita, just on this, right? So if you say to a newspaper that their content is racist, that it's race-baiting or religion-baiting, and they don't stop, what can your press council do? Will it have the backing of the law? Will it be able to, impose some sort of consequence, a material consequence for that media organization that's errant, that fails to live up to that code of ethics?
And that's the part we haven't come to yet. No, but compliance is a major issue. Mm. Yes, it is. You know, especially right now when you have got laws and you know the reason why a particular slant or a particular way a story is treated is because of all these laws that are there, the restrictions that are there. You understand that right now. So you cannot be expecting your media organization to comply, you see. Understandable. But we have to start looking at things. And the model that we are actually looking at, it's not the best model, but something that we're looking at is the Indonesian model. They've had it for the last 20 years, you know. It seems to be working for them, so we want to see what is it that's working for them and how we can bring it in. So compliance will be one of the issues that we will be discussing for sure, because we need to. Otherwise, like you said, it's a toothless tiger.
So Zarum, okay, thanks Vanessa for mentioning Indonesia, because your regional forum actually did bring journalists from around the region. What were the principal lessons? What struck you in terms of the principal lessons from the region for media reform?
My takeaway from that meeting was that essentially there is a need to impress upon not only journalists but the wider public that the importance of an independent media and the importance of essentially also a media that is trusted by the people. Right now in Malaysia, I think the mainstream media especially have got trust issues. There are major trust issues. Study after study has shown that people do not trust the mainstream media. Hence, circulation goes down. And I think if we can impress upon those organizations that one of the main reasons your circulation has gone down is because nobody was buying your stuff, primarily because they don't believe you. So for me, there is that need for media education. There is a need to educate them that, hey, you're going to go bankrupt if you don't change your ways. Yeah, all of you are going to lose your jobs, basically. And it's true. The trends are indicating that a lot of those kind of organizations are suffering now. Yeah. So,
okay, yeah. Let's turn our attention to that other dimension. I don't know, Vanita, if your group took this up, but the question of media, not just as a fourth estate, as a pillar of democracy, but also media as a business. How the media ecosystem in Malaysia has been, has it been captured by certain interests, especially when it comes to broadcasting? Are you interested at all in democratizing the media, making sure that, you know, especially the large groups do not monopolize, you know, radio frequencies, for instance, or television licenses? Is that something of concern for you?
Okay, two things here. One is, firstly, to get this sweet balance between, your social responsibility, so to speak, responsibility to the society, and also to make sure you make money. I mean, to get to that point, it's really very difficult. That's an ideal situation, but we have to still figure out how to get there. The other thing is that we feel that the RTM, the public service broadcaster, ought to be still government owned, but not necessarily run by the government as such. Meaning it's owned by the government, but there has to be a committee that runs it, an independent committee that runs it, that gets the appointments done, gives guidelines to how it should be done. Simply because it serves a particular function, you know, where it reaches to all the littlest and the smallest of communities, to the communities that are outside of the commercial realm, you know. And that needs to be done because we need to speak to everybody.
In fact, if we could, using a bit of radio magic, conjure up the minister himself into the studio, if he was here, Zarum, what would you say to him should be his first task when it comes to RTM?
The first task would be to make RTM truly a public service, meaning that the government provides the funding, but the government has to act on behalf of the various peoples in the context of Malaysia. So that's what a public service is, yeah? But the funding is provided by the state. The state gets the funding from taxes and other forms of income that they get from the people. And therefore, that organization, RTM, will then be an organization for the various peoples. Yeah, so that's what public service is all about, not government service. And that's what I would tell the minister concerned. Lay off, but provide the funding for RTM.
Vanita, what would you tell the Honourable Gobind Singh Dio if he was in the studio right now? What would your one message be to him?
Okay, number one, let's get rid of some of the laws, a lot of the laws, media laws. And number two, let us do the press council, leave press council alone.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much. That was Vanita Nadaraj, a journalist formerly with The Star and ASEAN Today. And also in the room, Zarum Nain, member of Aliran and also an academic at Nottingham University, Malaysia. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. We're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll have the news and then we'll be back with Enterprise. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.